You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone, Rob Guest from football.london here and welcome to the latest episode of Golden Guest Hot Tottenham, sponsored by NordVPN. Joining me as ever, it's Alistair Gold. Ali, you well?
I am. I can tell you are. You've got more gusto in your voice than I think I've ever heard before. Have a decent night last night, did you, at Goodison Park?
Yeah, just a bit. Not bad to beat that lot, 2-0. Pretty much stopped them from winning the league as well. So, yeah, good night all in all.
You should stay up now, shouldn't you? That'll cushion now.
Yeah, I think there's 8-point gap. Luton have 4 games left. Going to be hard to see them get enough points. So I think we're safe. So, yeah, it was just nice to actually see us beat Liverpool in person for once. I've never seen Everton win in the derby, so nice.
Well, that's good to break that run then. At least maybe it's like a, you know, an indicator of what's to come. Hopefully a week where derby victories for the home sides are the way. That would be very nice.
Yeah, another big derby on the agenda on Sunday at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, with Spurs taking on Arsenal in the 2 p.m. kickoff. We will be discussing that in today's pod, but what we're going to start with is some news regarding Tottenham's pre-season tour. Heading to Japan for the first time in 33 years, Ange Postecoglou's side will be playing at Japan's National Stadium on Saturday, July the 27th, when they take on Vissel Kobe. Kobe won the J-League last year, so going to be a good game. Going to be busy post-season for Spurs, with the heading off to Melbourne for the Newcastle United game, and then also going to be a very busy pre-season for the club.
Yeah, they're getting around a bit. It's you know, they've got a manager from across the world, and very much their pre-season is going to reflect that. I'm sure it wasn't kind of his doing, but there is a certain symmetry to the fact that they're going to two of the former countries where he managed in. Actually potentially three, because, yeah, I think there's likely to be a Scotland friendly as well. So it very much is the summer of Postecoglou, I guess. And I think the Japanese season will be right. I'm trying to think where that would be. I think they're about 9 weeks into their season right now. They should be kind of quite fit, and it could be a good test in that regard in terms of fitness. I may have got that completely wrong. I'm going to just double check that as we speak, but I think it is. Yeah, it goes from February to December, the league season, the J League. So yeah, should be a good test for what Postecoglou wants to do. It is a it's a crazy preseason, let's put it that way, in terms of distances. They always are, though, for teams. You know, I see kind of people saying, like, harking back to the old days when, like, Spurs would play a friendly at Stevenage and things like that. And, you know, we kind of saw that, didn't we, during the pandemic when they Leighton Orient?
Colchester, MK Dons.
That was it, MK Dons. Yeah. That was the other one as well. Yeah. Yeah, that was so strange. It did feel like going back to basics in a way. And look, there's different sides to it. There's some people that don't like it. They don't want their team putting all these miles in. Of course, there's the environmental side to it as well. I absolutely understand that. But then I kind of always take the point of view, and I think it's similar to what Postecoglou said, is there's so many Spurs fans around the world. This might be their only chance to see their team and their players in the flesh, you know, and playing live. And having been very fortunate enough to be out on these tours over recent years, you see how passionate, incredibly passionate the fans are in these countries. So I've got no issues about it. For the sake of a couple of extra hours of maybe jet lag that the players might have, I've seen them. They work incredibly hard on these things. It works as a bit of a training camp. The new players feel involved. I think last year's, despite the fact it was a bit of a kind of a mess in terms of having one game rained off, having another one, the opposition changed late on. It was meant to be Roma, wasn't it? And it ended up, the Sailors, was it?
Lion City Sailors,
that was it. But all that aside, I think it was a really important kind of bonding process for the likes of Maddison, Vicario, Doggy in there for the first time as well. Yeah, essentially all the new players that were in by then. And it'll be the same again this year. It is a good experience for them, I think. It's going to be mad. I mean, overall, when you look at it, you can't get past the Melbourne friendly against Newcastle, which is, I'm intrigued to know how that's gone down with the players, because, you know, they are kind of getting whisked away straight away after the Sheffield United match for a, whatever it is, 22-hour flight or so straight down to Melbourne, play a game. I think they're only there for about 36, 48 hours, and they'll kind of come back again, which, is going to be an experience. But certainly Melbourne will go mad for it, because that's Ange's city, where he grew up. We're going to July, and you've got the Scotland friendly. I'm not sure if that'll be the first one, but it's certainly a game in Scotland is being lined up ahead of the Asian tour, which we now know, well, we've had it confirmed, we'll go to Japan first, and then South Korea looks to be the next destination after that. It's yet to be confirmed, but it seems to be the case. And it'd be interesting to see who the opponents are in Korea, because the Korean media had it as a K-League kind of all-stars team as the first game, and then Bayern Munich as the second game, which we now know that Spurs are also or are playing Bayern in a game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium just before the weekend before the season starts. So by all means, they may play Bayern twice. It'll be a very different Bayern and Spurs without the players that probably were at the Copa America and Euros. It could happen. It would be very unusual to play the same team in pre-season within 10 days, you know, twice. But you never know. We'll see. And then I wonder whether they'll do... Do you remember last year they went to Barcelona, didn't they, in the midweek before? Whether that was just a special thing because it was a cup, like a friendly cup that they played or not, or whether it is actually something that they're going to plan to do. It was quite helpful in that it got the players who didn't play in the Shakhtar friendly, get them kind of 60 to 90 minutes or so. So I can see the benefit of it, but we'll see. But it is going to be a packed one. And I wouldn't be shocked if there's another one thrown in there and a couple of in-house training ground friendlies as well. You often see those against like League One, League Two sides. They've got to get themselves ready for what Postecoglou keeps telling us he hopes is going to be a big season ahead. We've got to get this season out of the way first. There's still a lot more to be done. Still 6 games to go.
Yeah, very much so. Just looking at Spurs against Bayern at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, that's Saturday, August the 10th. Mm-hmm. We've actually just had new dates confirmed for the 24-25 Premier League season within the last hour or so. That kicks off Saturday, August the 17th. So there's going to be a bit of a gap in there if they do want to have one final pre-season game.
In that midweek, yeah.
Yeah, so next season starts Saturday, August the 17th, ends May the 25th. They've also made the point in the statement that there's going to be no fixture on Christmas Eve this year because of, the uproar over that Wolves versus Chelsea game back in December, which no one was happy about. And there's also no mid-season break this time around. And I mean, there's going to be so much football in January anyway with the expansion of Champions League and the Europa League. Yeah. So it's barely going to be any time left in the calendar to have a break. It's going to be really interesting in Japan because I was in Tokyo 5 years ago to cover Chelsea's pre-season tour there. And they absolutely love the football there in the country. And I can remember getting to the game in Yokohama. This was probably about 3 hours before kickoff, and the queues were huge already, just snaking around side the ground. Really? And I'm sure that's what it was like for you when you've been to South Korea as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The honestly, everywhere I've been to, in America as well, it's just incredible kind of passion for it as well. Yeah, I mean, you were there again in Japan quite recently. What can anyone that travels over to the game and the Spurs players kind of expect, like the kind of the culture and the way people are? I know this is turning this into a bit of a travel program, but just interesting because I've never been there. If I do go this summer, it'll be my first experience of it.
Yeah, it's just absolutely hectic, non-stop. All the transport links are good, food's great, etc. So I'm sure they'll enjoy it. And I think it said in the statement that the players are going to be, you know, experiencing local culture and that as well.
So they always chuck them out there into community things.
Yeah, so no, it's great, great country. And for anyone who's not been, I'd certainly recommend going. On my final day, I did actually have bit of time to kill, so I walked around the Japan National Stadium, and it is a really impressive setup. Obviously built for the Olympics in 2020. I think that took place the following year, did it? Because of COVID.
Yeah.
And literally no one was in attendance, which was a real shame. But it's an impressive venue, and I think everyone there will just be looking forward to seeing a Premier League team playing.
I just hope the rain stays away. It's obviously we had a bit of a nightmare in Bangkok with the game last summer being called off very late on as we were all there at the stadium. And it's just this time of year, that kind of part of the world, it's the rainy season in Japan is July. So there is the potential. It's quite warm there. And certainly knowing from 2 years ago, Korea gets a little bit wet this time, that time of year as well. We had some proper downpours. There was one moment where we were actually worried on the morning of the match that it might get called off. So, yeah, it's really, really hot. It's up like 28 to 30 degrees each day, if not more. But, yeah, that weather, it can be quite changeable that time of year. So, I guess, I don't know, warm weather training for players, it probably pushes them even harder, doesn't it? It's all part of the process nowadays. But yeah, no, it'll be really interesting. And yeah, a very much a global summer for Tottenham Hotspur.
Was that in Korea 2 years ago where the players were doing those brutal pitch runs?
Yeah, that was just, I took a photo, didn't I, from up in the stands. I had to really zoom in on my phone. It ended up going kind of viral. I think a lot of the news agencies that weren't there kind of nabbed it and used it as well. Play it like Harry Kane being sick, wasn't he, by the side of the pitch. Sonny, oh my goodness, there was a moment when they were pushing them all so hard. They had to do, it was the pitch long run. So they did like an hour and a half of training under Conte. And then they do the pitch long runs after that. And so they would go back and forth and back, and you just watch them all starting to wobble as they go. And then Sonny like fell to the floor and just, you know, you're in Korea. Like the entire stadium just like this, this big kind of gasp as he fell to the floor. And it was like, you know, you can just imagine them thinking like, you killed him. You killed our Sonny. How dare you, kind of thing. He was fine. But yeah, they were absolutely knackered. It was interesting. There were only a few. You could tell who the incredibly ridiculous super fit players were. I'm trying to remember back now. I think it was Troy Parrott. I think Saar was one of them as well. And Matt Doherty, I feel like I remember him faring quite well. And someone else that's gone out. Oh, Brian Hill. Brian Hill, that was the other one. I remember it was those four who just were at the kind of the front of the pack for the all. Like, I think they did something like...
It's about 50.
I feel like 32 stuck in my head for some reason. Right. Maybe it was something like that. 32 pitch longs. And it was like sprints. It wasn't even runs. They had to kind of sprint it. It's just mad when you think about it. And but the thing is they're a very fit team this season as well. But it's more ball work that they use. Whereas under Conte, it was a lot more running. I mean, I'm intrigued to know like if the two teams were to play each other, kind of which would be the fitter, you know, Spurs from 2 years ago and the one from now. But yeah, I forgot about that. That was an experience. Yeah, in really, really hot temperatures then as well, and so humid as well. It's like so sticky. It gets out there. I would not want to be running up and down a pitch 32 times. That was mad. But yeah, more excitement like that this summer.
Yeah, on the last podcast, we spoke about Tottenham's new home kit for next season. Images have been doing the rounds on Footy Headlines. It's the website who publishes all the pictures of the kits, and a new one's emerged since our last recording. The away kit, it's three different shades of blue. Cobalt Bliss, Royal Tint, and Binary Blue. Looks pretty smart, to be fair. It reminds me of one, was it early 90s, a number one? When Sheringham was playing, similar shade and pattern. Yeah, very smart.
Yeah, I mean, we should add the caveat, whereas the last one we spoke about, that was like an actual photo of a kit that was probably a bit further down the line, whereas this is more an idea of what it is going to look like based on information. And that kind of happened last week, and then a couple of days later, a photo emerged, and it was different. We ended up with navy sleeves when the original one didn't have it and things like that. So, yeah, we should stress it's not 100% this is how it's going to be, but if it is, yeah, I really liked it. It's got the thing that's a bit different about it is it's got the Cockerill badge in the center just above the AIA, which is in navy, which I know everyone prefers it to be that, obviously, so it's not red. And it does look a little bit funny. The only thing I would say is you've got the Nike logo still kind of on one side, and then you've got the other stuff central. It does look a bit odd. I wonder whether in the final version it won't look entirely like that.
I think there was a kit a couple of seasons ago when Bale was playing where the badge was central, like a yellow away kit.
Yes.
In different shades of yellow.
Was it yellow? This second or third kit? Yeah, I know one which one you mean. Yeah, and they've also put a little dash of gold on the sleeves. Yeah, for me. Yeah. Yes, in tribute to Alistair Gould. It sounds like I died or something. In memoriam. Although it did say in the report I noticed on it that the gold could also be on the side of the shirt, on the trunk of it. So, yeah, as I say, it's very much, I think, still a bit of a work in process, but all the colours are there and the kind of look of what it might look like. But if it rocks up and it is exactly how it looks in those photos, concept images, it'll be very nice. We'll find out. We'll just talk about those pre-season tours. You know, I can imagine they'll be rolling out the home and away probably for those. You might even see one of them maybe for the game in Melbourne next month as a little bit of a come by this, please. But yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I think there was talk that the third one might be like a greeny kind of colour as well. Although when I spoke to someone else, they said that they didn't think it was going to be that because it would be too close to Chelsea. You've got to have a similar kit or something. And you've got to have very different kits to the other teams so that there's so little chance of a clash or something like that. But we'll see. But yeah, it looks very nice if it is the case. It does. I think I was talking about in the last one, when we went the home one, about my favourite one of recent years was the retro light blue one. And this has got a little bit of that vibe without the collar. So, yeah, I'd be quite happy if this ends up being roughly what the new away shirt looks like.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Right, we're halfway through the pod. It's only a bite-sized podcast today as we were here on Monday discussing all things Tottenham. So, Ali, do you want to let us know about the benefits of using NordVPN, should I say?
Yes.
Something which should come in very handy for you in Japan.
Yes. If I go, hopefully I will. If I go, then as in previous preseason tours, I have used NordVPN quite a lot to be able to access things from back home and stuff like that. And it is very helpful. It just reminded me that we got someone very amusingly replied to a tweet, didn't they, from NordVPN about our show. It's gone out of my head exactly what they said now. It's just literally popped back in there. But it was, yeah, it was very amusing that actually people are replying to NordVPN to mention the fact that our show kind of talks about them. But yeah, it will. Heading off across the world, it's something that you can use in so many different ways. You can use it if you want to access stuff back home, watch things from back home. If you get a bit of downtime where you want to watch a show or a streaming service or whatever from back in the UK, you can switch your device to thinking it's back in the UK. Or if you are heading abroad, you can maybe use your NordVPN to make your device think it's in the place you're going to go to and allow you to kind of book tickets or things that might be cheaper if you're doing it thinking it's from the actual home country where you're going to be going to. It is the fastest VPN in the world, NordVPN, and that means there's no buffering, no lagging, and you can stream your favorite shows from anywhere in the world without the bandwidth throttling, which is a very important thing. No one wants their bandwidth throttled. And not only that, but the outlay on a NordVPN subscription is cheaper for you in the long run. That's because, like I say, you can purchase streaming services or bookings from other countries at a much cheaper rate. It can also help you to a degree with your security, especially when you're using public Wi-Fi out and about. It can lock up your device that little bit more than it would be. And yeah, there's a whole host of other benefits from signing up to NordVPN, so why not give it a go? To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/goldguest. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast in doing so. The link, if you just missed it there, is in the episode description box.
So it's Arsenal up next at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday.
I've heard, yes.
2 p.m. kickoff, big, big game, both in terms of Spurs' top four hopes, and then Arsenal... they were given a bit of a boost last night with Liverpool losing 2-0 at Goodison Park. So they'll be...
I've heard that as well.
Yeah. So they'll be looking for all 3 points as they look to win the league for the first time in 20 years. It is, you know, like I said, a huge, huge game. But I think what's important for Ange Postecoglou and Spurs is that there's also a reaction there from last time out when they lost at Newcastle.
Absolutely. Is there more pressure on Arsenal? I was wondering that this morning. I think there might be.
I'd probably say so, just because they're going for the Premier League title. And it is the business end of the season. So this is where league titles are won and lost, where Champions League places are won and lost. So yeah, maybe so. Because as things stand, Spurs are 6 points behind Aston Villa. 2 games in hand still to play. So yeah, I'd probably say more pressure on Arsenal.
I think so. But what I would say is there'll be a real sense, I hope, among the players, the Spurs players and the Spurs fans that, you know, it's really irritating that Arsenal are coming to the Spurs stadium to play for a potential title. Yeah, that is, it should be a case of like, that should be us. That's what we should be aiming for. That we shouldn't be kind of, you know, us trying to get fourth spot with this result and you guys trying to get the title with it. That should, if anything should spur them on, that should. And I'm hoping the atmosphere will be brilliant as well on the day, because it is. It's going to need, such a cliche, but it kind of is true. You need that 12th man. And I think that they need to make it an absolutely horrible experience, I think, inside that stadium for the Arsenal players. It needs to be full of pressure. It needs to be any loose touch from them is going to be seized upon by the players, but also the fans with the noise. And yeah, it needs to become a proper fortress on the day, because, you know, Spurs have had some big performances at home against Arsenal. It's a fixture that is not the greatest overall for Spurs, but it is mostly away. At home in recent years, Spurs have probably got the upper hand overall, I'd say, if you look back over the fixtures. But this is an Arsenal team that are on a run at the moment, and they are digging out results, and they're going to places like Stamford Bridge and absolutely annihilating Pochettino's team. And they're picking up, even there's kind of some games I've seen recently where you've watched the game unfold at the start, maybe Brighton, a reasonable example, some other ones recently where they've just starting, you're like, oh, this could be the one where they wobble. And then they just suddenly find it from somewhere. And I hate to say it, because obviously we're all about Spurs here, and Everton to a degree. But, you know, they are showing the hallmarks of a team that can go to the very top, because they're digging it out from in tough situations. So obviously, as with Everton against Liverpool, it's exactly the same scenario, in that you do not want to help your local rivals get anywhere near the title with a win. So that should also play some role with both the players and the fans. But mostly also, it should be a yardstick for next season. It should be a case of, you know, Postecoglou's come out very clearly on a number of occasions and said, next season we're going to go for the title. Well, I expect to. If not, what's the point in me being here? And yes, with the last couple of away games, I'm sure, or last, not all three, was it? Because West Ham, technically, they could have won that. But let's say the Fulham and the Newcastle games, you know, you're not going to come away from those thinking they're anywhere near a potential title challenge next season. But we know a lot's going to change in the summer. And we know Postecoglou is going to continue to do what he does behind the scenes and what he's done at every club and what he's going to do with these players. So they are going to get closer to the product he wants them to be. And I just feel like days like that give them the chance to lay down a bit of a marker for next season and remind people that, look, yeah, there's been a few bad results in the last month. It's not the end of the world. It's not the worst possible thing that's happened, but they've just stuttered and stumbled a little bit. And they need to kind of remind themselves of the direction of where they're facing. And sometimes these games are the big thing. You know, we said this before we came on air, that it's a very tough ask for Spurs to get the fourth place, I think, at the moment. But they go and pick up a result on Sunday against Arsenal. That's potentially the momentum builder for those remaining five games after that. And that's how they need to see it, because they've got the ability to do absolutely fine in that result. Obviously, we know they're going to be missing Destiny Adogi, but they've got enough players and they've got a system that I think against Arsenal will probably, Arsenal's opponents might suit them better than some of those other games we've just spoken about where they put in poor performances. But like I say, Arsenal in great form. It should be a really good game, as good as these kind of derbies can be. But we saw at the Emirates, you know, both sides had their chances to take all 3 points. And it could be like that again on Sunday.
They're always good games, aren't there, between the two as well? There's always plenty of goals involved and
more drama. Yeah,
I think there's got to be more of the same on Sunday at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And as you say, if they can, you know, get a win, that could be huge in what remains of the season, because Spurs could potentially go into Sunday's game 9 points behind Aston Villa, because Villa play Saturday evening against Chelsea. And then if Spurs drop points against Arsenal, then Champions League looks, you know, a mile off. So Sunday's game's huge. I'd love to be in the changing room Sunday just to hear Ange's speech, because the players have been, you know, raving about his speeches over the course of the season. But, you know, this is the big one now. So he'll be, you know, proper drumming it into him, what it means to the fans and getting the 3 points. And yeah, hopefully there's a big, big reaction from the very first minute and they do go on to win the game.
Pursue a red card off for 5 minutes, is that what you're suggesting?
He's so pumped up.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about that, the Postecoglou speech that will come. And, you know, just kind of going on from what you were saying about the potential kind of ramifications of a positive result, if Arsenal then start to stutter and stumble, there's a potential that the Man City game, the penultimate game of the season, Man City might have already wrapped up the title, maybe, in that scenario. There could be that. And then Spurs suddenly have a game where, I don't know, maybe Man City are kind of... trying to remember now. FA Cup final, aren't they? Man U, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they might start thinking ahead towards that, and he might... Look, let's be honest, a Man City second string is still probably good enough to beat both teams in the Premier League. But there's so many different permutations to it. Ultimately, look, you shouldn't need favours from anyone, but just kind of talking about the various kind of things that could be a knock-on effect of a victory. They've got to go and do it. That's the key thing. It is a game that has so much drama. Just reminded, when I said that, of Eric Lamella scoring one of the best Rabona goals in a North London derby and then getting sent off in the same game. It is a game that brings so many ridiculous things. Emerson got sent off as well, didn't he? Last season. Was it last season?
Was that in the 3-1 defeat?
Yeah.
I think the Emirates are, should he have been sent off? Conte was manager for that one. I think it was 3-1 the previous season when Nuno was manager.
Yes. Well. Oh, that was dreadful, wasn't it? Yeah. Yes, that was horrendous. Yeah, so it should be a bit of an end-to-end game, as most Spurs games actually are. But yeah, we were, I must admit, Guesty and I were kind of mulling over whether to do should we do a combined 11 like everyone does? And we just found it a bit of a nightmare. We started to look at it and you kind of think it's a little bit daft because Arsenal top of the league, they're absolutely flying. You could make a case for almost every one of their players pretty much to be in the 11 right now. Whereas Spurs, on current form, it becomes difficult. So, yeah, we kind of threw out that idea. But by all means, if you're watching this on YouTube, feel free to do your combined 11 in the comments underneath because we're not brave enough to do so. Because it was so difficult. We were trying to work out. Even like a simple thing like, well, you know, Van de Ven's had a great season. He could go in there. And then you're disrupting a back two of Saliba and Gabriel that's, you know, been probably one of the best defences in the Premier League this season. And it was really not as easy as we wanted it to be. So, yeah, we're going to leave that to you. We're going to absolutely spinelessly pass that over to you guys to give us your kind of take on who would be in a combined 11 underneath in the comments. And if you're listening to this in podcast format, just fire it in a tweet to us. Let us know or whatever social media platform you use. But where are the key battles for you on Sunday on the pitch?
Probably midfield. 100%. Yeah.
Stopping Odegaard. Odegaard and Rice, isn't it? Those two.
Yeah. Odegaard's in such good form at the moment. You just need to try and nullify him just because of his quality on the ball. He can pick out a pass out of nothing. I think we saw that midweek against Chelsea. And then you look at Spurs' midfield and they've just really struggled there over the past few months, probably since the turn of the year. I think I said it on one of the podcast just gone that Spurs' midfield was their strength at the start of the season. Now you could probably argue it's the weakest position.
It was their strength at the Emirates as well. They all played really well, those three, especially second half.
Yeah. So it's one of these, I don't know if does Ange know his best midfield at the moment. There just seems to be a lot of chopping and changing there.
What one would you go for Sunday?
I think it'll be Bissouma, Sarr and Maddison.
I think so. I think he goes back to the one at the Emirates.
Yeah, I thought Bentancur did all right at Newcastle, but I think Sarr's energy, work rate in midfield, going to need those legs in there. So I imagine he's going to come in. Bissouma, yeah, I think Bissouma's the best number six suited to Ange's system rather than Højbjerg. Yeah. But I think if Bissouma has another poor game, then maybe it's time to give Højbjerg a go at Chelsea. Yeah. And then
Maddison. 2 weeks to prepare.
Yeah.
If you don't get the best version of Bissouma after 2 weeks of preparation, then it doesn't reflect well on him, I don't think.
Yeah. Then I think Maddison will start. I think you could probably make an argument for him at the moment that maybe he shouldn't be in the team, given his form. But then again, Ange hasn't really given Lo Celso a go. I think at Newcastle, again, he was probably 5 or 10 minutes and you should be giving him more. So, yeah, I reckon it'll be Bissouma, Sarr and Maddison.
Yeah, I think so. The Højbjerg, you know, I think a lot of people are going to suggest that maybe to solidify them against a team like that as well. But I don't know. I think you're at home with the crowd behind you. I think Bissouma, it's about discipline with him. It's very much going to be about that. I do wonder in a strange way whether Davies being there instead of Udogi slightly helps Bissouma. There's been quite a few times I've noticed Bissouma has gone over to cover the space in behind where Udogi has been. Maybe with Davies perhaps not being as or slightly more reluctant to leave himself exposed because he won't have the pace of a doggy. Maybe Bissouma then doesn't have, that's one thing Bissouma doesn't have to worry about. Of course, it has knock-on effects at the other end of the pitch, not being as effective, I suppose, as Udogie can be. But it maybe that helps him to a degree. And it's also another experienced head at the back who, you know, I said in the previous one, has not lost a home game when he started again in the North London Derby. You know, I'm not saying he was the shining star of every one of those games, but it's just an interesting little stat. So elsewhere, I mean, looks like potentially Pedro Porro could be back, which is a big thing. We're awaiting confirmation on that in the press conference tomorrow, but there's some early suggestions that he might be in contention, but we'll see. These kind of things, you know, all you need is one training session and it doesn't look right, or some, or a little bit of individual training, it doesn't look right. So, but that I think would give me more confidence than, as long as he's 100% fit, than maybe the two more solid fullbacks. I just think, although I would say Porro's been a little bit more inconsistent in his output, I think, in the attacking sense than he has been previously. But I'm sure that will come. But yeah, I would be a little bit worried if we get the version of Porro that we got against Newcastle. You could see how hampered he was and how he was struggling with something. And if there's any element of get that against Arsenal, you know, you just can't have that with, what do you have, maybe Trossard or Martinelli, depends who they play down that side, doesn't it? You don't want that at all. He's going to have to be at absolutely full pelt. Otherwise, you are better off going with Emerson. Emerson's had, I think, I know I've kind of picked out the red card one, but I think if I remember correctly, he's had some decent performances against them as well, I feel. Or one, maybe. I can't remember. They all kind of, North London derbies do blend into one for me. I hate them all. I just hate them so much because I never go in with any positivity. And it's always a bonus when they kind of go the right way for Spurs. And yeah, look, the other key battle is going to be Saka up against probably Ben Davies and Mickey van der Ven down that side of the pitch. We saw Udogie have a bit of a mare with him in the first 20 minutes, 25 minutes or so in the reverse fixture, but then kind of got to grips with him. Different challenge for Davies, you know, as someone that is not going to have the pace of Udogie to deal with that, but has dealt well with bigger, faster kind of wingers. The reason I said bigger, faster, because I immediately thought of Adama Traore. I always go back to it. I remember him playing against Middlesbrough and absolutely tying up Traore. Despite the fact that we kind of all presumed he was going to ghost past him. Yeah, that's going to be a key battle. And obviously Havertz is in good form at the moment as well. And how the centre-backs deal with him, he's going to obviously not be like any natural striker would be. He's going to take up very different positions in there. And then at the other end of the pitch, those two centre-backs. And we haven't even mentioned set pieces. Ugh. You know, I don't think it's any surprise that we're going to have this game, and it's Arsenal are the best, scored the most goals from set pieces, I think, in the Premier League, and they're coming against the Spurs team that do have their issues at defending set pieces this season. So, yeah. Are you worried about the set pieces?
I think if you look at the numbers, then I think a lot of Tottenham fans probably will be concerned with them if Arsenal get corners and free kicks in good positions. But they've had 15 days it'll be since the Newcastle game, so there's plenty of time there to work on them. So yeah, fingers crossed that has been the case at Hotspur Way and they remain solid on those set pieces. Going to be interesting to see what happens with Spurs in terms of the attack. I suppose a lot of it probably depends if Richarlison's fit to play. You'd imagine he should be in a position to be involved in the squad. What Andrew was saying, it always seemed to be a bit touch and go for the Newcastle one, hoping he was back after missing out the previous game. And, you know, if he's fit, does he start? Put Son back on the left?
I think that would be a big ask of him. I mean, he hasn't started a game in, 2 months? That would be a big kind of thing to throw him into from the start. But then it depends where he was fitness-wise, I guess, at the start of the 2 weeks. If they've had 2 weeks to absolutely kind of get his fitness up, then maybe. Who would you take out? It's really difficult because the two wingers have played really well in recent games until essentially, yeah, pretty much the Newcastle game. Just look, Spurs look so kind of devoid of an ability to break through that it kind of maybe has painted a picture over the previous games when we were kind of raving about what Werner was doing, raving about what Johnson was doing. So if Richarlison's fit, let's say, was, which I don't know whether he will be, and don't forget, Sonny did start up front against Arsenal and scored twice. Didn't he have something like 14 or 18 touches and he like scored two goals? I think he barely did it, barely touched the ball. If you were starting with Charleston, then who would you have either side? I'm presuming Sonny on the left.
Son on the left. I think Johnson on the right. Yeah. Werner is naturally left-sided, isn't it? So it makes more sense to have Brendan Johnson on the right. And I think Arsenal's left-back, in terms of their defence, is probably their weakest position. There always seems to be a bit of chopping and changing there. Mm. It was Tomiyasu at left-back, I think in midweek against Chelsea.
Yeah.
Kivior's played there at times, and Chenko as well. So I think that's the area you want to be targeting when you're attacking. And Johnson's speed, his ability to put in a low ball as well. I think that's what I'd be going for. And then as well as, you know, Timo's done at times for Spurs lately in terms of the goals and assists, then maybe just have him on the bench. And it's not a bad option to bring on. Same as well with Dejan Kulusevski.
I wonder whether it's a game for Kulusevski. I've just got this funny feeling whether he turns back to him. And obviously, form-wise, there's not so much of a reason to do that. But I just wonder whether, you know, Deki is quite a big game player. He has in the past come up trumps in the bigger games, the high-pressure games. And whether he just retains the ball. I don't know. I was about to say returns the ball a bit better, but he hasn't been. Maybe that's been one of his issues recently. He has been giving it away too much. But then also, I suppose you have his strength and his ability to drive up the pitch on the counter-attacks as well. It's a difficult one. It is. I think my gut tells me that probably it will be Sonny in the middle, unless Richarlison has had the most incredible couple of weeks, if he is available, to be able to be involved. And then, yeah, I would probably start. I think Johnson started on the left at the Emirates, didn't he, before picking up the hamstring injury. And he actually played quite well in that until that point. And it was, it was Deki on the right, wasn't it? It's a difficult one. It is. I would probably go. Yeah, I would maybe go back to that. I would maybe go Sonny through the middle with. There's a part of me that would prefer to see Johnson on the right and Kulusevski on the left, but I don't think he'll do that because he wants... I think just Deki doesn't look as comfortable when he's in that role. He's fine when he's playing it a bit deeper, but when he's on the left up front, it's almost like it removes his natural inclination to cut inside and have a shot. But probably from Ange's point of view, it would mean that he could do those cut across the six-yard box balls with his left foot that you kind of really need. But yeah, I think that's the one area probably the bit. I think defence is pretty much set. I think you've got the four there. You've got the keeper. It's all about really, for me, whether Bentancur comes in the middle, because I don't think he'll go with Højbjerg. I just don't think he sees him as part of the future. And the front three, the blend between it. So that's probably where all the key issues are going to lie when we do our predicted team tomorrow and Saturday.
Yeah, big, big decisions to make, definitely in terms of the team. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, Villa can potentially go 9 points ahead of Spurs as they play Chelsea at Villa Park on Saturday. I was having a look in terms of a fifth Champions League place by the Premier League earlier. It's safe to say, probably not going to happen now. With just Villa left in Europe out of the English teams, Germany, who they have been going pretty much head-to-head with in terms of the European performance spots, because Italy are first and, you know, have got an extra spot for next season in the Champions League. Germany have Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund left in the Champions League, Leverkusen in the Europa League. You know, there needs to be a huge twist in what remains of the European competitions if England are to get a fifth place. I think looking at it, I think Germany need 0.48 8 coefficient points to triumph over England.
I love the way you said, I think, and then gave the most exact to a decimal point answer. That's very good.
Yeah, well, I just found it on the screen. Basically, Germany, to get that second spot and have 5 teams in the Champions League next year, they just need 2 wins or 1 win and 2 draws. And I mean, you're looking at the Champions League fixtures, Munich against Madrid, and then Dortmund against PSG. I'm sure they'll get a win, maybe 2 draws from that. But then
maybe, yeah, it's not set. I wouldn't say
set, but then Bayer Leverkusen are the outright favourites to win the Europa League. They've got this Roma. That'll be.
They haven't even lost those games all season, have they?
No. They've looked like losing on a few occasions, but they always find a way to score in stoppage time. So, I'm sure Germany will get the 2 wins or 1 win and 2 draws from somewhere from those 3 teams. And if not, Villa had have to win all 3 of their games in the Conference League. So that's Olympiakos in the semis and then one of Fiorentina or Club Brugge in the final. But then you're still reliant on basically the German teams having an absolute nightmare in the semis. So
true. I mean, Emery is he likes his European trophies. You know, he does know how to do it.
Yeah, he does. I think just play it safe in terms of Tottenham. If you want in Champions League, top 4, I just don't think there's any chance now.
Just win everything.
Yeah, I think someone worked out it's like England have a 1.1% chance of getting the 5th Champions League place.
Really, is that what it is? I mean, yeah, in Spurs, it's in Spurs' hands.
Yeah,
I know it might not feel like it, but mathematically, it's in Spurs' hands to get 4th. They just have to pretty much probably win every single game they've got the rest of the season, or hope that Villa trip up in a couple of theirs. You know, the Chelsea game's a funny one for Villa. That could go either way. Chelsea could collapse again, or they could have Cole Palmer back and put in a good display. I mean, they played pretty well earlier in the season, didn't they, against Villa?
Yeah, in the FA Cup a couple of months back. I think they won 3-1 at Villa Park. And this was when Villa was so, so good at home. So you just never know what Chelsea side you're going to get.
Yeah, certainly is the case at the moment. But we'll see. We'll see how it shakes up in the weeks ahead. But all starts Sunday. That's where they've got to get the momentum going. And just put that horrendous kind of performance at Newcastle behind them. 2 weeks of preparation. You know, this should be the best version of what Postecoglou's got right now that he should be putting out there, destiny or doggy aside. They know what to expect. It's not going to be a surprise. Like, Arsenal aren't going to come out there and surprise them in the way they play. They know exactly what they've done this season. And they've just got to bring their A game, their Ange game.
So a huge, huge game at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday. We'll be covering it at football.london as ever. So we'll leave that there for today's podcast. We'll be back probably Monday to reflect on the North London Derby. Fingers crossed we'll be talking about a victory, and then we'll also be looking ahead to that game at Stamford Bridge next Thursday. So in the meantime, just keep with us at football.london for all your latest Tottenham news. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/goldguest. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast. The link is in the episode description box.